Welcome to the Mixed Faith Marriage Mastermind discussion with myself, Brooke Booth. We have Chris Rich and Suzette Halterman. We are three certified life coaches who work in the area of mixed faith marriages. For instance, Suzette works with couples. Chris and I work with individuals and couples, but we're all in mixed faith marriages ourselves. So if you need help with your mixed faith marriage, we are not bad resources. I would even say we are great resources. So Chris Rich is active believing. Her husband does not attend. Suzette is not believing, but attending-ish. Just going to add that.
Good way to put it.
And I don't attend, but my husband does. So that's who we are and a little bit of our backgrounds. Today in this mastermind panel discussion, we're going to talk about parenting in a mixed faith marriage, which is, I know, something almost universally faced in a mixed faith marriage. I don't want to say completely because not everybody has kids, but in the LDS world, kids are not uncommon. We've touched on it from time to time in previous discussions, and today we're going to give our full attention to parenting. So as we typically do in these discussions, I want to just start by exploring our own personal, like, how are we all doing this? And talking about that, because I think just giving some real life examples is always valuable. So I hear from clients quite a bit about some pretty significant concerns they have about, like, the impact of a mixed faith marriage on their kids, the impact of a mixed faith marriage on parenting. Many people use the phrase with me about not being on the same page and their concerns about that. I hear that need to be on the same page regarding parenting a lot. So let's talk a little bit about our own experiences. Like, what's your experience in your mixed faith marriage? What are some wins? What are some fails? And then we'll go deeper into, like, being on the same page and all of that other stuff. But how's it work out for you too?
I'll start. I'll say that difference in parenting styles has always been a problem for my husband and I. So Dr. John Gottman talks about how every couple has their own set of perpetual problems, like the ways they're different, that they're just never going to see eye to eye, never be on the same page. And every couple has their own, like, set. And for my husband and I, different parenting styles is, like, one of our biggest conflicts. So the shit when we became a mixed faith marriage, the fact that we weren't on the same page about parenting was like, it's more of the same story. Like, this was not, it was just kind of a different flavor of the same thing. So I guess the wins for us, let me preface this by saying, just this week we had, like, two big, like, mixed faith marriage parenting discussions over little things. Like, it always comes up, but I think because we've always struggled with being on the same page with our parenting styles, we've kind of learned to, like, accept that. That's just part of our life. And we work through it. We've found ways to not let it, like, influence our marriage. So that's our win. And it still comes up. I mean, this week it was clothing the kids wear to church. Like, I take my kids to church. I don't care if they wear their tennis shoes. I don't care if they wear a shirt and tie, but apparently my husband does. I didn't know that was a thing. So we had to, like, hash that out. And then my daughter was saying, oh my God, in our house, and my husband handled it one way and I handled it a different way. And it was like, okay, how are we going to handle this? So it comes out, like, there's so many little things that come up. We struggled this week, but we got through it and it made us closer as a couple. It was really good. So that was a win. And it's just a struggle, I'll be honest. It's hard.
We ride the struggle bus as well. Parenting is a tricky, tricky thing. One thing I do want to start off by saying is, I think this idea that we should be on the same page, I know for me personally, causes me a lot of grief and suffering. Even if you weren't in a mixed faith relationship, just this idea that we should think the same, because we don't on so many different things. So I notice when I'm thinking that we need to be on the same page, what that creates for me. And it's usually panic or frustration or something like that. So anytime I find myself thinking that we should be on the same page or we are not, I do some searching with that because it usually doesn't go well. As far as wins and losses, I think my husband has been out of the church for, I mean, it's about 20 years now. It's been a long time. And in the beginning, I really loved it because he was just like, this is your deal. I know you want to do this. And he wouldn't say anything. It was just like, you teach them how you want to. And he didn't say anything. And I thought it was lovely because it was just like, okay, let's do all, you know, like I can just do family home evening and scripture study and come follow me and all those different things. And come to find out, he did have some opinions on a lot of the stuff that he didn't share. And so I think that probably is one of our big losses is, although it was comfortable for me to do whatever I wanted, I, in hindsight, I wish I would have asked him, like, are you okay with this? Are you, is there anything you would do differently? We did not have those conversations for a really long time. And I really think that was detrimental. It was easy then, but now you know, I think he's finally at the point where he feels more comfortable that he can say stuff. And I'm going to be honest, I did not make it comfortable for him. If he would have wanted to say, you know what, I don't want to do this, I didn't make it easy. So that's one thing. And then as far as a win, I think just being able to apologize, to try again, to pivot, to be to take responsibility, because I look back now and I think, yeah, I didn't handle that the way I would handle it very differently now. And just having that compassion on myself and my husband too, just like, yeah, I'm so sorry that I didn't reach out and ask. So I'm thankful for those, you know, being able to try again. And okay, so that didn't work. What do we want to do now? So I think just having that, being able to pivot, I think is a big win.
You know, when we first started our mixed faith marriage, there was an element of what I call like the tug of war, like garnering votes, you know, getting kids on your side kind of energy. Luckily that didn't last very long because I quickly realized like that was a mess. Like I did not want to show up that way. But, you know, it did happen at first before like there was some awareness around that. And I've seen that before where they're sort of like, come to my side of the philosophical divide. So what helped me change that approach? So I was kind of like, and then one of the wins is when I started to recognize that and I started to be like, I don't like this dynamic. Help me change the approach is, and this worked really well for me, is being really careful to neither attack nor advocate for him. To look at parenting as like this neutral thing that we both can do. Like, it's not good or bad or right or wrong. It's just his approach and my approach. He has the right to parent. I have the right to parent. We both get to exercise that right. This approach helped me so much. On top of it, I was also able to tell myself, like we're just parents. We're like consultants. Ultimately, the kids get to decide their own decisions. They get to decide what they're going to believe or not believe, how they're going to live their life or not live their life, what values they're going to incorporate or not incorporate. And we're just like consulting. We're like, here's some ideas. Here's, you can watch me. You can watch your dad. You can look at us very closely and decide what you want to do, but you ultimately get to decide what works for you. And I wasn't perfect at this and I'm still not. Sometimes I get heated and throw jabs, but I try to apologize. I try to own it. I'm not perfect at that either. But like that's the general effort, and for me personally, it's been very helpful. It's taken like the parenting from this kind of stress way down, where I'm like, yeah, he said that, great, that's his opinion. Like, what do you think? It instead of, well, he said what? Like, well, you should consider this, and like it's changed how I show up, not just with my husband, but with my kids as well. So let's talk a little bit more about being on the same page. You both have talked about this. What do you think about this idea? What are the pros? What are the cons? How do you deal with a client when they say like, oh, we should be on the same page. How do I deal with this? Like, give me some ideas. Give us some ideas. Let's share.
I decided I don't even like that. Although I still use that like phrase, being on the same page, being on the same team. But I feel like a better analogy is, this is a group project. And like, I don't know about you, but as soon as I say like group project, it's just like this feeling of yucky, because group projects are so messy and like complicated, and somebody does all the work, and it's, you know, they are hard. And I feel like parenting, it's not about being on the same page. You're in a group project that lasts like, you know, 20 years per child or more, right?
So
this is a long-term, right, like minimum. This is a long-term group project. It's not about being on the same page. It's how are we going to do this group project? And because you are going to have ideas and I'm going to have ideas, and there's going to be times where you want to go one way and I want to go one way. And then at some point you have to bring the kid into the group project because it's their life, right? Like the older they get, the more say they have in this group project. And you're kind of trying to get out of the group project because the goal is to have them take over as an independent, you know? So that's how I like to view it. So I think there's a lot of benefits to not being on the same page. And that is, you have to learn and grow. You have to give, you have to hand over the reins to your kid. You have to learn to manage your own, like become more mature in these relationships and how you handle things. And you just don't get that practice. If you agree on everything and you have the same, everything's the same and we agree, like you just don't grow. I mean, the benefits though, when you do see eye to eye, the benefits are that you tend to not drag your kids into your own mess and into your own parental struggle of like, how are we managing our group project? The tendency is to pull the kids into it. Like you were saying, Brooke, get them on your side. We do that as humans. We manage our anxiety through a third person always. It's such a human tendency. So if you're on the same page, I'm still using that phrase, but if you see eye to eye, you're not going to drag your kids into it as much because there's not as much anxiety and tension. If you're managing this group project and it's a struggle, you'll grow, you'll learn, and you'll learn to hopefully not bring your kids into it, but you'll mature. You'll mature a lot more if you bring some conscious awareness into this whole process.
I think as far as starting with the cons that I see, I think it can be confusing. Like, wait a minute, why is this, why are you doing that and he's doing that? I think that can be confusing. Also, I mentioned just the whole suffering when you're not on the same page. It takes work to be able to get through whatever you're going through. So that I think is definitely, but not necessarily a bad thing though. As far as pros, I kind of like to think of it as having two different languages. Like if you spoke English and Spanish in the home, it is awesome because then your kids learn to speak two different languages, and they are, you know, there's all sorts of research about how their brains develop and the benefit that is. And I like to think of having a mixed faith relationship kind of that same way. You have the language of religion and the gospel of Jesus Christ. And then you also have different, you know, it's another language. So I like to think of it that way, that my kids are learning both, because ultimately they're going to do what they want anyway when, and I don't even know that it gets to that point. And I do want to point out, Suzette, I had this idea that once they turned 18, that it was going to be so much easier. Yeah. Two big fat thumbs down on that. So I think another thing too is in relationships, I know I when my kids were little, and my kids are a lot older, they're 14, 20, and 22. I know when they were little, we'd go to the park and I would be like, oh, be careful. You don't go too fast. You know, I was the one that kind of like pulling them back. And my husband would be like, that's awesome. You just climbed to the top of that. And, you know, two very different approaches, but I think they needed, and it was easy to see, like, this is good that they have both. They have the safety, they have the drive. And I think we can do the same thing in a mixed faith relationship too.
Yeah, I really agree with what you're saying. I hear so many people say like, it'll confuse the kids. And I'm like, but will it? Like they're getting contradictory messages all the time, everywhere, from everything. That's just life. And I don't mean to sound like fatalistic about it, but like, this is a real life skill to be able to process messages and decide and think and decide what you're going to do. And that somehow your parents should never add to that is, I think, maybe a little too perfectionistic. But You know, you said something interesting, Suzette, earlier, like even before the faith transition, parenting, like not everybody's on the same page with parenting regardless of faith. And I think sometimes we tell ourselves we are, but like probably if you were to really put it under a microscope, there are always going to be differences. And so much of relationships is being aware of it and learning how to reconcile and work with it, learning how to communicate, learning how to navigate conflict and not avoid conflict and these things. I think one of the big pros for me is the kids see, okay, mom's doing this and she's accepted in this family unit. Dad's doing this and he's accepted in this family unit. You know, she's doing A, he's doing B. So I can do A or B and be accepted. Maybe I can even do C and be accepted, or D or E or F and still be accepted. Like to me, that message or value of inclusion is definitely part of the family culture I want to be creating. I realize not everybody like has the same vision for a family culture, but that's something that I highly value. And so that's one of the pros for me is like permission granted to be you in this family. And to like live life how you're going to live life, and your like acceptance is given regardless. And maybe one of the cons is the kids are confused, but I think that happens anyway. I'm confused a lot. I don't know what the problem with confusion is.
Like, life is confusing.
Right. Okay, let's talk about some specific parenting issues. Like, I actually like the ones you brought up earlier, Suzette, about like kids' Sunday clothes. I'm like, oh, that's a good one. Or, oh my God, or swear words, or like, there's so many things we can plug into this. I just picked three random ones. We can talk about other ones, but let's talk about like some specific parenting issues and talk through how to deal with it. And I picked some we've already talked about before, but I think it's one worth revisiting and but there's so many things. So let's talk about going to church or seminary, or what you wear to church or seminary. Let's talk about family prayer, family scripture study. Yes, come follow me, Chris. We should throw that one in. And then alcohol, just because a lot of people struggle with that. I'm like, here's a bonus thought for alcohol people. So let's start with church attendance, which could be seminary. It could be girls camp. It could be activity boys. It could be, or do they call it activity kids? I don't know what they call it now. My son goes to it, so I call it activity boys. All of these things, youth conference, whatever it may be. How do you work through that?
I think because I work with couples, my goal is always, how are you doing this group project? Like, whatever the issue is, are you talking about it? Are you listening to each other? Are you understanding what you want? Are you trying to like understand meaning? So get out away from the position. Like, I want my kids to attend like the position of they should attend versus the position of they should not attend. And what's the meaning behind it? Why is that important to you that they attend or that they don't attend or that they go to FSY or that they go to seminary? So it's how are you working together to make this decision? And then at some point, like, I think it's okay. You know, you can say, yeah, you have to go to this. Like, but it's the why. For example, like, I make my boys watch 4 hours of my daughter's dance recital. Like, I made them do that. They didn't want to be there. But the why is, we're a family that supports each other. So whatever your why is, if it's, hey, like in our family, we go to church as a family, like once or twice a month. So the why is, we are going as a family. You don't have to believe it. You don't have to like it. You don't have to, this doesn't have to be your life forever. Like, you don't have to keep going when you're older, but this is what we're doing to be supportive of dad. Like, we're going as a family. So it's the why, and making sure the why leaves room for the child's process to grow and make their own decisions in their life. Right. So it's not like you have to do this because this is what our family does always and forever. And you know, you won't belong if you don't do this, or you'll upset me, or you'll upset your dad. Like, it's not, the why is just like, hey, this is our family time this week. One of the things we're doing, your belief is up to you. Whether or not you want to continue this tradition is up to you. At some point, we'll give you the option to opt out, right? As you get older, like, we can't control you. You get to make those decisions. But I think just the why, and as they get older, increasing, giving them more choice, because that is part of their development is having some choice, at least to some extent.
And to add to that, I think it's important to recognize that every family is going to do it very differently. And every kid is going to be, what works with one kid might not work with the next kid. I think for me, I really wanted him to do those things. I wanted him to go. And Brooke, you had asked the question earlier, do we make them go? And there were times where I did. And looking back, I think a lot of those backfired. It made it, they had a lot of resentment. And I got to the point where I recognized that I was really operating by Satan's plan. There were times I would joke about it. I was like, I think Satan's plan would have been a great idea, because it was, I wanted to be in control. I wanted to create a certain outcome. And as I did that, I recognized I was not giving them the gift of free agency, which is not mine to give. They were already given that. And that was hard to stand back and I'm going to put let in air quotes, to let them have their free agency, because it's not, I really, that was something I really struggled with, and just recognizing these are choices that they need to be able to make. And obviously you want to do what's age appropriate and what works in, like I said earlier, what works in one family won't work in another. And my husband, he was supportive as long as that's what my kids wanted. If they wanted to go to church, then he was like, by all means. But at one point he just said, you know, if they don't want to go, please don't make them go. And I was making them go, and it didn't work so well.
I'll share a specific example that we had to deal with is my husband was really concerned that of course they were going to stay home because that's just easier. Like it didn't feel like a choice to him. He's like, well, duh, they're going to want to stay home because they're going to want to take the easier path. And that was a really interesting conversation we had, like, in response to that, because I think it's probably true in some regard, but I think it's also slightly reductive as another regard. And so part of our conversation was looking at, like, it's not always easier to stay home from church. It's not always easier to go against a parent's wishes. It's not always easier, or it's like they're not always assuming that not attending is based on laziness. If it's a child, it might be based on a principle or a value they hold. I also noticed that, like, if it was based on principle, then that was probably misguided. And that was something we needed to discuss. Like, not just because they're kids doesn't mean that they have misguided values or principles. We also had to talk about, like, the assumption that, like, waking up early or something like that is character building. Like, just because something's harder is good or better, and harder doesn't always equate to virtuous. Like, these were, like, conversations that we wouldn't have had otherwise. And they were really interesting conversations. Like, just because something is hard doesn't mean it's good. And they were really interesting conversations. I think this is kind of what Suzette was alluding to earlier, is like, really, like, exploring, like, what's going on here? Like, what is this really about? Because it's often not really about, like, do the kids wake up and go to church? It's often about, like, what's going on here that's, like, in the relationship. When we were able to explore these things and look at these, like, we were able to just calm down a little and to, like, understand the decisions and, like, ask the kids different kinds of questions and approach it a little bit differently, instead of just like, yes, you go, or no, you don't go, or, and, like, tug of warring the kids. It was really helpful to, like, get into those types of questions for us. Let's talk about family prayer.
Just really quick. I think for me, when I would ask those questions, a lot of times it boiled down to, what will other people think of me and my parenting? Yeah. And that was really hard, because a lot of it was, I as humans, we have something that we're going through, and we make it mean something about us in so many different situations. So I think that was really important to recognize, like, I want them to go to church so people think I'm a good mom. I want them to go to seminary so people think that Chris Rich has it together. And I had to be able to let go of that and focus on my faith. My kids stopped attending, so I've gone by myself for several years and being like, you know what, I had to separate what people were thinking of me, and what works for our family.
Such a good point.
I think all of this requires a lot of parent maturity for that reason. Like, you really have to be comfortable in your own skin so that your kids can make choices. And it doesn't have to be black and white. Like, you participate or you don't. Like, I've got a kid, he goes to Young Men, but he doesn't go to seminary. He was ordained as a deacon, but he doesn't know if he wants to be ordained, as you know, as he gets older. And like, they go sometimes, but not all the time. So being okay with it looking different than maybe what other people do, and like, however you manage it in your group project might look different than how other people do it. And that's okay. And but that takes a lot of parent maturity, because we use our kids, and I'm speaking for myself, I use my kids to bolster myself. We all do this. And I'm realizing how much I do it. Like, I caught myself the other day just using my children to make myself feel better. And it's so, we're just constantly having to like stop that. Like, I'm not using you. This is your life. My life is separate. My job is to nurture you, guide you, set limits. I can do that, and I can give you some spiritual, you know, I can share, but you get to pick and choose, and it doesn't have to be all or nothing. And I have to be okay with that.
No, these are such good points. Chris, you got some.
I remember when my son, my youngest, was getting baptized, and I was watching Nacho Libre. You guys remember, did you ever see that show? Where I can't remember the whole story, but someone was supposed to get baptized, and I think they went up behind him like with a bucket. And I can't remember exactly what happened, but someone didn't want to get baptized. And I remember thinking, like, this is totally me. Like, that's a great idea. I could just throw them in the font. And recognizing, like, oh, that's probably not, that probably doesn't involve much free agency. Yeah. Okay. Go watch the movie.
Okay, let's talk about family prayer. So this would be anything like family scripture study, come follow me, like family devotionals. Like, I know this happens with extended family sometimes. And I want to start here because I had, like, as I was thinking about this, and Suzette, you've already mentioned this earlier, but there's like, I think there's sometimes a difference between like the process and the content. What I mean by that is the process is like, what's the process that this decision is being made? What's the process that the couple uses to navigate this versus the content? The content would be like prayer or seminary or come follow me manual. And I think sometimes we need to distinguish the two, because is this a process issue or is this a content issue? Most of the time it's a process issue. But what I mean by this is like, issues not always substantive issues. Like, the prayer sometimes is the issue, but the process, how things are handled in the relationship, how decisions are made in the relationship, I think is oftentimes more at the root of the issue. So like, for instance, with family prayers, like, what's the process for how concerns are addressed in your relationship? If somebody is addressing concerns about family homemade or family prayer or family scripture study or something, like, how is that being addressed in the relationship? And not even looking at family prayer immediately as the concern, but like maybe it's something like this. Is there a concern about teachings of practice and ideology, its impact on the kids, its impact on the family culture, or something like this? Looking at like these issues can be a great time to see if there's a like power differential. Are there ultimatums? You know, like, we always have to do this or we never can do this. Like, are concerns minimized? Are they ignored? Are they dismissed? Are there actual discussions or just mandates given? And sometimes this is really subtle stuff. Like, sometimes when a conversation, a concern is brought up, sometimes, and this can be a concern to have it or not have it. I mean, this can come from either side of the table, but, you know, is it redirected? The conversation is redirected away from the concern? Are we kicking it down the road on the false premise of consideration? Sometimes it sounds really nice, like they're polite, but it's not actually something they're willing to consider. I think when we're looking at these types of issues is, what's the process versus the content? And where does the real issue here lie? Is it how the concerns are being addressed? Is it how the concerns are being communicated? Is it the actual doctrine? Or like, what's really the issue?
I think process versus content is a huge part of it. I think the other part of it is ritualizing family life. A lot of those things, prayer, come follow me, scripture study, all those things, it's part of the ritual, and that brings the family together. And that's what the research shows, like rituals bring the family together. And so the idea of not having those just feels like, bleh, like our family's going to just kind of just fall apart. But there are ways to, you can still ritualize the family. So you can, it's kind of like a both and. You can have the rituals, but they don't all have to be religious. So you can have, you know, there's other things, like there's Uplift Kids, there's Family Brand. Those are alternatives to kind of family teachings and family values that aren't based necessarily in just religion. So those are good options. But you can find ways to ritualize your family life. And you can work together to maybe bring in elements. Like sometimes we'll pray before meals and sometimes we'll do gratitude. Like we did that for a while. You know, sometimes we'll, like, maybe our family rituals used to be a lesson and now our family rituals are like, instead of come follow me, we do Uplift Kids, or we just do like an uplifting, like a family movie. So we do that. We do now like movies Sunday. My boys love video games, but now it's like, Sundays are, there's just no video games, and we're going to do like a movie that has like a something that you can learn from, like not a movie you would just watch with your friends, but something deeper. That's a ritual. So it doesn't have to just be the come follow me and the scriptures and the prayer. There's so many ways you can change it up, ritualize it, but you have to use the process of how do we make that decision and talk about it together, compromise. The other piece of advice, and I tell myself this all the time, I don't get to parent my way all the time because I'm married. Like I don't get to have it be my way. If I want it to be my way, I need to get divorced and pursue full custody. But I'm married. These are not my kids. They're our kids. I don't get to do it my way. And neither does my husband. I might get elements of my way sometimes. Hopefully at least 50% of the time I get some aspect of what's important to me, and my husband gets some aspect of what's important to him 50% of the time. The process of how we figure that out is important, but I have to grieve the fact that I just don't get to do it my way. That's just what marriage is. We're a group project now. That's reality.
But I think that just they're working on compromise, you know, like what, and figuring out. I love the phrase, this is what I believe. This is what Dad believes. This is how I do it. This is how he does it. And offering those two different, you know, not that one is right or wrong, but offering those two different, these are the two different viewpoints. I think that can be really helpful.
So let's talk about alcohol. Let's revisit this one. How would we apply these ideas to alcohol?
Alcohol is a tricky one because people are going to have really strong, strong views about that. And I think it's the same thing. It's process. Like, how are we going to make this decision as a couple? And it's getting out of the black and white thinking. It's really like maybe talking to other parents. There's a lot of people who don't want their kids drinking underage, who want them to drink responsibly or don't want them to drink at all, that aren't members. And yet maybe one spouse still drinks. And how do they do it? How do they manage it with their kids? There's a lot of ways to teach, and there's a lot of ways to handle alcohol, because a lot of people in this world drink, and not all parents want their children, you know, all parents want their children to drink. If they're going to choose to drink, they want them to do it responsibly, is wanting their child to become an alcoholic. And there's a lot of people who do that successfully. And again, like you said, Chris, like kids are going to make their own choices. So I think we have to be real that they may choose that at some point in their life. So how can we have both of our values in as far as how we're teaching our kids about alcohol? How can we encompass both of our values? There's a ton of ways to do it. I think as members, we just don't have a lot of examples of how to do that, because it's always like no alcohol. And we just don't know any other way, but there's so many ways. I love talking to non-member parents about this, because I'll just say, I don't know how to navigate alcohol, because I grew up in this family where it was like, this is no, like we didn't have it in our home, nobody drank, I don't know how to do this. And they have great ideas about how they do it. It's, and I love it. I just am like taking notes, like, you know, so there's so many good ways to do it. And people are smart, much smarter than me, that have, you know, done this with teenagers and in their life.
And I think adding on to that, just my kids totally know where I stand. I, you know, like this worked for me. The word of wisdom was very important to me. And I don't regret that that's something that I've never struggled with. And I'm thankful for that. So I always say, this is what works for me. If you choose differently, and then I want to educate them to the level that I have, that, you know, like what Suzette was saying, to, you know, like you want to make sure that you're doing it safely. And that was one thing I was actually talking to my my oldest about that. She's like, you never taught me how to drink responsibly. It was just don't drink. And I think it's important that we do, you know, we do share, this is what worked for me, and help them to understand, or like with sex, that I'm so thankful that I waited until I was married. And if you choose not to, it's important that you're safe, and, you know, like teach them the things, because they might not follow what you did.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I want to come back to the process and content here, because I think this what really applies to alcohol too. You know, what are the fears with the children? Can those fears be aired and validated and understood? Can there be compromise? Like, are things fully understood? I think sometimes if this is a really struggle bus area, I think sometimes we need to back it up and look at, like, why are we having a hard time talking about this? Why are we having a hard time, like, making decisions around this? What's going on here so that we can't even get to here where we are compromising and talking and, like, negotiating? Like, what's preventing that? Because I think a lot of times people get stuck way upstream. Like, they're not like, how are we going to teach our kids responsible alcohol use, which is a lovely place to be, but they're like they're paralyzed way upstream about, like, we can't even, like, talk about alcohol or anything. And so I'm always curious, like, what's going on up here that's stopping us from being able to have these types of conversations around, like, responsible alcohol use, or, like, talking to other parents, and, like, what are some ways we can deal with this that are in alignment with, like, mutual values? You know, like, some things are concerns being dismissed? Is there fear of punishment or penalty if you bring up what you want to talk about here? You know, will you pay for it with silent treatment, or will it take days to get back to normal? Like, what's going on here that's making it hard to have these other more downstream conversations? You know, this will upset them too much. You know, I won't bring this up, even though it's important to me. Like, what's going on with that? Way before you even get to the, and I'll make a comment about coming back downstream, because I have seen this with my own kids work really well and not really well. Like, we definitely taught them abstinence, like you're supposed to teach in the LDS church. And then, you know, we had this faith transition, things changed in the family. And a few years ago, my sister came to visit. She's, like, highly educated, smart, in the medical field type. And she just had, like, a really frank conversation with them about drugs that I had never, ever, ever considered in my life. And she's just like, so marijuana is different than heroin. And she's just, like, explaining it. Because sometimes with, like, the abstinence education, we just are like, drugs, alcohol, bad. And there's no, like, nuance. There's no, like, education. And she just sat through them and she's like, this is the difference, this and this and this and this. And so they're basically like, okay, so never heroin? She's like, and they're like, okay. Like, they were, like, totally open and interested in this conversation. And I'm, like, sitting back, like, would have never thought of that. Like, I would have never had that conversation, but so grateful that somebody was having this conversation with the kids. And this comes back to, like, what Suzette was saying is, like, we're in uncharted territory and we got to, like, get up to speed. Like, we've got to do what we can for these kids, because, like, if you want to teach abstinence, great, teach abstinence. There's nothing wrong with that. But if you don't, like, how are you going to fill that knowledge gap?
I remember.
Go ahead, Chris.
My, one of my kids came home from, I'm in Massachusetts, so things might look very different than they do in the West, but one of my kids came home from a health class and shared what they had learned, and I was shocked. I was appalled and just was like ready to go in guns a blazing, and how dare you teach my kid that? And I talked to my husband about it, and it was actually, it took some time, but recognizing like I would not have taught him those things. I would not have shared that in order to be safe, you need to do this. And looking back now, I'm thankful that they received that education, because it was not something, you know, and once again, I'm all for abstinence. It worked very well for me. And that doesn't work for every kid. So I'm thankful that there are other places that can help me on the things that I don't have the experience with.
And I think these bigger, really heated topics where maybe like each person is really passionate about it, like you were saying, Brooke, like work on the upstream part first before you tackle some of these bigger things. Like, can you speak to each other and listen? Can you speak with diplomacy? I'm all for like being very diplomatic. Can you speak? Can you listen without it just becoming a mess? Can you give and take? Are you flexible enough that you can tolerate the discomfort of not getting your way all the time? Can you, all those skills really have to be in place. And so if some of these issues you get nowhere on, yeah, back up and look at the how are we talking about things? Where are we getting stuck in our process before we bring up, up the big gun topics, like before we open the can of worms topics, because we need all the mature skills on board for some of these can of worm topics.
Yeah,
And I think
before we talk heroin use, let's like way back up.
to Sunday clothes. Like, do they wear a tie to church or not? Right? That's easier. That's easier.
And I think this is where talking to a coach or a therapist is so helpful, because you may not recognize you're even in a stream that there's something going on. So I think that's so beneficial, having someone point out like this isn't the only issue. We've got other things going on. So important to get the professional help that so you can figure out what to do, because most of us don't just come with those skills. I certainly didn't.
I'll make a point about that. I have a client and he's always like wanting to like talk about the content, like tithing and this and that. And I'm like, no. We gotta back this up because and understand what's going on up here way before we can understand what's here. Otherwise, we're jumping in the deep end and then we're just not able to swim. That's such a good point. Okay, this is one of my favorite questions. I'm very curious what you guys have to deal with, what you have to say with this. How to deal with the challenge of a child not following in your belief footsteps. So this can look different depending on where you are on the faith spectrum, but for like post-Mormons, they want to serve a mission, they want to get married in the temple, they want to like do all those things, or get baptized or whatever it is, depending on their age. Or they don't, if you're the believing Mormon, they don't want to do those things. They want to pass on those things. Like, how do you? And I think this speaks actually to what you were talking about, Suzette, of like confronting our own maybe immaturity and projecting our success or our worth or our value onto our children. But let's talk about this. What are your thoughts on this?
I mean, the natural progression of kids is to move into adulthood where they make their own choices. And it's our job as parents, our job is to swallow that and metabolize whatever that brings up for us in that process. So, like, that is our job. And if we are not doing that job, it becomes enmeshment where we are too close to what they're doing and it impacts us. So, we need to make that break slowly over time, where I have to deal within myself of whatever that brings up for me, whether they choose th this or this, because they're an adult and that is what they're supposed to be doing, is navigating their own life, failing, making mistakes, making bad choices, make whatever, however we view it. Our job as a parent is to get really good at just metabolizing within ourselves all that that brings up for us. That is our job, and we have to do our job. If we're not doing that job, it's going to really be problematic for us, for them, for the relationship. So I think that's, if they choose to do things you want them to do, great. If they choose to do things differently, that is still your, that sucks, but your job is to deal with it within yourself. You may need to go to get a therapist, get a coach to help you metabolize that, work through it, process it. But yeah.
And I think as part of that, there, it is so important to so yes, that is my job. And there's a lot of disappointment, pain, grief that comes along with that. So I think one of the biggest things is recognizing that, validating that in yourself, like, yeah, this looks different than I planned on, and letting you have those emotions, letting you just allowing those emotions, I think is so, so, so important. And I think it's, I think that's one of the biggest things is just being able to allow those emotions. I think another thing that is, that I've done a lot of work on, we define our success usually by the results of our kids. That, okay, so my kids got married in the temple, they went on a mission, they graduated from seminary, all those different, the things that I thought would happen. And so I had to really look at my definition of success. And I recognized that my success needs to be based off of my results, off of things that are in my control. I don't get to choose what my kids decide to do. So I did a lot of work on that, recognizing like, okay, what is important to me? How I am successful if I love my kids, if I show up for them, if I try again. Those are things that are in my control, and learning how to focus on those things instead of basing my success off of their results that frankly I can't do anything about. So that was, I think those are two things that really have been helpful to me.
Yeah, I can really relate to both of what you're saying, because like I've definitely been taught, and I believe that parenting is like super important. Like we put it like super high as like, you need to be a good parent. Parenting is super important. You need to teach your kids and all of these things. And I think it can be really confusing how to define success as a parent. I'm just thinking in my own training and my own messaging, you know, I was taught like your righteousness will bind them to you regardless of your decisions. And then I was also taught like Lehi was a great parent, but he got a couple of lemons. Like it's fraught, it's confusing. And I started to like work through this as a parent, I realized ultimately what you're dealing with is like how to deal with another person not making decisions you want for them. I mean, this is exactly what we do in a mixed faith marriage. Like, how do you deal with a person when they're not following the script or the manual? So we say as coaches, like, how do you deal with that? And it's a lot of what you two have already said. We need to grieve, like grieve unmet expectations, grieve sorrow that things aren't how you wanted it to be, process your feelings, work through that. Consider, do you want to bring in some acceptance here? Do you want to accept like what you have here, what this person is presenting? You know, accept what you can change and what you can't change. I think an important question, and this is not a right or a wrong, but like what's more important to you, this relationship or the decisions this person is making? These are hard questions to grapple with. And I don't want to say there's a right or a wrong. This is very individual. But this is something that I see that parents have to face at one time or another. Okay. Go ahead.
Sorry,
just a really important piece is not to put the blame on the other spouse, and recognizing the complexity of what creates a human being and their choices and what they do with their life and what they like. It is not, you can't just blame it on, well, you left the church and so that's why our kids are leaving the church. It is so complex what creates a person, what influences a person. So just get rid of blame. That's part of metabolizing within yourself. Like, I'm not going to put this on anyone else. This is, I'm just going to deal with it. This is not anyone's fault either way.
And I think it's good to remember too, that even if I was in the blame, I blamed for years and years and years, and recognizing like you can have two parents that are completely all gung-ho about church and their kids still don't like it. Or you can have, it's not black and white. There are so many different variables of what that could look like, and playing around with that, that helped me a lot when I wanted to blame.
We should have a panel discussion on blame. I'm just going to throw that out there right now.
Yeah, love it.
I'm like, woo, lots of stuff are coming up. But let's move on to our last question, just for the sake of time. I think this one's an important one too. How to talk to your kids about your mixed faith marriage, how to talk to your kids about the fact that there's a faith transition happening with one of the parents or both or whatever. You know, do you have tips, suggestions, things to avoid? Let's wrap up talking about this particular topic.
I'll just make this quick. I was in a training the other day and this man said, you don't lecture principles, you embody them. And I think that is the best way to approach it with your kids. You don't need to tell them the whys and the history. And here's what I found out. You embody that. Like, hey, I found some information. It changed my mind. I'm making a different decision. I'm comfortable in my skin and I'm going to live a different way. Like, you embody the principles in how you live and in who you are. And you don't have to, I haven't told my kids not a single reason. Well, maybe one, they know that I don't like the gender inequalities, but other than that, like, I don't tell them any of the reasons. I just embody being secure in my own skin and happy with my choices and content with who I am and being okay with other people not understanding me and agreeing with me and having permission to do what I feel is right. I just embody that in my life. And I feel like that's all I have to do. I don't have to tell my kids anything.
I think that it's important that when you are having any sort of conversation, whether it be about a faith transition or anything else, to consider the fuel that you're operating from. Our emotions are the fuel that we take action from. So if I'm having a conversation with anger as my fuel, it's going to look one way versus if I'm having a conversation with curiosity or compassion as my fuel, it's going to look totally different. So I think that is so important that anytime you're having any sort of conversation, think about what emotion do I want to have to fuel this conversation? Because it will look very different depending on your fuel.
And I'm just going to add to that before I make my own point. Sometimes you may want to use anger as your fuel. Like, it's not just like bad. Sometimes it's a very effective fuel. It's just something to be thoughtful and strategic about. I want to say something that actually, I think you said this earlier, Chris, is like each kid is different. Each family is different. Each relationship is different. I've seen with my own kids, like some need a lot of information and a lot of updates, and some are going to have a lot of questions. And they'll want to know more. Some, they like the highlights is enough, or like some don't have questions at all. They're just like, okay, you do you, mom, or whatever. Like, it's very different for different kids. And I think sometimes we forget that like our kids' needs aren't always what our needs are. Like, it's easy for us to know what we would have wanted and then to sort of try to give that to our kid. But like I have one kid, she needed a lot more information. I have other kids and they didn't need, like, she had a lot more questions and concerns. So it can be helpful just to, like, I like to ask them, you know, I want to talk to you about this. I want to tell you about this. Or I want to have, like, I want to give you, let you know what's going on. You know, tell me if I'm sharing too much or not enough. You know, tell me if you need more or if you need less. And let there be, like, let the relationship, like, come into play and start to. This works better for older kids, especially. But I really have enjoyed like just being more honest with my kids. Like, what do you need to know here? Like, what? Like, I'm happy to share whatever you need me to share. But I know some of my kids are like, no. And so just having that conversation of like recognizing it's different, not one size fits all does not apply here. And then feeling out and having real conversations on what they'd like, and they may not know, they may not be able to answer that, but at least asking the question, I think, can be like show your respect and care for them as well. Okay, that's what we got for parenting. We have 2 minutes. Does anybody want to make a last comment, or you have an extra addition that you've been thinking about, or something you wanted to add?
Just, I think we'll be talking more about this. Like, I don't think this is the only parenting one we'll have, because this is a hard thing, it's hard to navigate.
I would add that I worried about everything. Catastrophize always went to the worst case scenario. And in my family, some of those things have happened. And I have found out that the spending all the time worrying was actually a lot more uncomfortable than the actual thing. I wasted a lot of time and energy with thinking about all those things that could happen in the future. And then when they do come up, it's like, yeah, I don't love this. And I love my kid. And what am I going to do now? So little advice, worrying doesn't stop it from happening. And it's exhausting.
Okay, well, we'll pick up again in another month. Thank you as always.
Thanks, everyone.